Today we're going to start with the one another lessons, and the first one is love one another, and we're going to start with question two first. So let's look at 1 Peter 3:8. Keisha, will you read that, please?
Finally, all of you, be of one mind, having compassion for one another, love as brothers, be tenderhearted, be courteous.
Okay, so this verse mentions love as brothers, be tenderhearted, courteous, and having compassion. So, what kind of love is this talking about?
Brotherly love.
Which is the caring kind, and which? How do you define that? Put others before yourself.
Sacrificial.
Sacrificial. The welfare of others is paramount. That's what we want to focus on, because this kind of love is not based on feelings. It's not necessarily a natural love. So it's something that we are commanded to do because we're brothers. So what is 1 Corinthians? I'm sorry.
Verse 9 tells you what not to do. If you're loving, if you're being harmonious, brotherly kind, it tells you not to return evil for evil, or insult for insult, but give a blessing instead. In verse 9.
Okay, where did I get that verse? Okay, yes, you're right. Verse tells us what it's the opposite of then of what brotherly love is. Good, Elizabeth. Okay, let's look at where is the
1 Corinthians 13.
Yeah, I was trying to think of the word, the penultimate or the ultimate description of love. We're all very familiar with this, but every single thing in this list has to do with, okay, what love does and does not do. So let's starting down there in verse 4, love suffers long and is kind, it does not envy, it does not parade itself, is not puffed up, does not behave rudely, does not seek its own, is not provoked, thinks no evil, does not rejoice in iniquity, but rejoices in the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. The thing about love is that, if we remember that it's about doing for others or not doing to others, you know, or being treated the way we want to be treated, all of these things just come naturally. But sometimes we have to remember these things if we say we have fallen out with somebody. This is the kind of thing we have to look at to figure out how to deal with it. And to remember, especially if that person is our brother, and we need to fix the situation because we need to coexist. We need to, we all have the same goal. We have so many other things in common that we need to work out what the problem is. So, 1 Thessalonians 5:15, does anybody know what that means? That says, no, that one is right, and always seek what is good for one another. Not just when it's convenient, just when we feel like it, not when it seems the best thing to do. It's always. We always have to put the other person first. Love is, without love, what does 1 Corinthians 13 say? Yeah, it's nothing. We're nothing. If there's no love, then what we do is pointless. There's just no point to it. So if the love is there and it's seeking the good of the object, then that's what we have to do to please God. That's what God is wanting us to, that's how he is seeing brotherly love. And then Philippians 2, 2, and 3, we've looked at that several times and probably will several more. How does that sum it up? Pretty much the same words, but.
As Christ loved us.
Sorry, Sandra?
As Christ loved us.
Yes. Yes. What else? Who's talking? Okay. Susan, I didn't hear you. Okay.
One mind,
one accord, no selfishness, no conceit. Then look in verse, I didn't put verse 4, but esteem others. Well, it says that actually in verse 3. Esteem others as better than ourselves.
Verse 4.
Let each one of you look out, not only for his own interests, but also for the interests of others.
No, you said that. You were talking about that.
I meant to say, I started to say verse 4, but it was in what I wanted was in verse 3.
Okay.
Okay, so, I mean, this is just a whole bunch of different ways to say the same thing, basically. You know, put other people first. Be willing to sacrifice my time, my money, my resources for someone else. Be open to that. Be ready for that. It's not, you know, it may not happen every day. There may not be something come up every day, but we need to be prepared in case it does, in case the opportunity presents itself.
I put in Galatians 5 also, and those fruits of the Spirit that's listed there, and of course the deeds of the flesh, but it talks about love, which I think is the caring love. It talks about patience and kindness and goodness and gentleness and self-control. You know, as we're dealing with others and loving one another, this should be the attitude that rule, you know, how we do love one another.
Mm-hmm.
And have compassion, Colossians 3:12 says, for one another and forgive one another.
Okay.
And, you know, to love one another, you know, it's just not this feeling of caring love. It's just not this feeling of love. You have to let the fruits of the Spirit rule.
That's a very good point. That's a very good point. And, you know, I've had occasion to change my feelings. Say we're going to talk about this later on down about how loving your brethren is not a feeling, it's more of an action. But sometimes your feelings can change toward a person. If you train yourself to love that person as God commands us, put them first, be always on the lookout for their welfare, then oftentimes feelings, you know, actual feelings can change, emotions can change about that person. So sometimes we don't know people very well, and we just make assumptions, and you know, and don't even give ourselves the opportunity to get to know that person or to know what they have to offer as a brother or a sister. When you were talking about Galatians 5, I flipped over there, but I got to Ephesians instead, and I was looking at the first of the chapter where chapter 5 verse 2 says, "Walk in love, as Christ has also loved us and given Himself for us, an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet smelling aroma." You know, Jesus sacrificed Himself for us, and so there's nothing, no sacrifice that we can make that would ever, you know, come close to what He did for us. So we need to, you know, just keep that in mind, if we can keep that in the back of our heads.
The story of the Samaritan, they asked, you know, He was teaching them, love your neighbor as yourself, and they said, who is my neighbor? And of course, our brethren are our neighbor, so we have a double duty toward them. But then He went on to explain what that love was in the story of the Good Samaritan. You know, he did, this man was an enemy, basically. But he did what was right and what was best for the man. He didn't know if he stopped if the robbers were standing around waiting for somebody else to come. He didn't know anything. He just did what he saw needed to be done.
Okay, God saw the importance of putting that story in the New Testament about how to love a neighbor, how much more important would it be for us to love our brethren?
Well, you said the whole law hangs on two laws.
Right.
Love God and love your neighbor. So
our brethren are our neighbors,
yes,
right.
Our brethren are our neighbors. But as a brother who has accepted Christ as trying to live right, then should not that give us extra incentive to not...
Absolutely. That's what I meant.
Help them. Someone told me one time there was a person they were having a difficult time with their attitude toward. And she told me, you know, I started praying for that person. And she said, it's hard not to like somebody when you pray for them.
Exactly.
And you see that they either have issues or you're thankful for their faithfulness. They're at every service. They're thankful that they're willing to try to help others learn. They're willing to teach and do those kind of things. So I thought that was a pretty good insight. That, you know, if you're having difficulty with somebody that
you have that
biggest thing, start praying for them. And if you're asking God to help them, then how are you not going to?
Okay, good point.
1 Peter 1:22, you know, there where it talks about fervently loving one another.
and the Holy Spirit put in there from the heart. And so, you know, it's not just an outward show of something. It had better be because you love God and you love them, it has to be from the heart. And because God alone is the difference. Now, doing things for people will still get done. But if you're doing it, you know, for pride reason or just because, you know, you're expected to or something like that, it's different than doing it from the heart.
I'm not sure I agree with you, Linda. I hadn't thought about it that way. To me, from a pure heart means make sure your heart is pure so that you can love one another fervently. But I have that verse listed under a question I put on our next question, which is number one, about can feelings be commanded? How do we love our brethren as commanded in 1 John, throughout 1 John? Ma'am?
Throughout 1 John?
Yes, but how do we do that?
In action.
In action, yes. We have to show it. We have to show it. Okay, so if we aren't showing it, I think it's kind of like what Pat was talking about prayer. If we make it a priority to do it, then I think the feelings may come. But I don't know how we can command love from the heart for somebody we don't like.
No, I didn't mean fuzzy feelings. I meant sincere.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, from the heart. Sincere. Not hypocritical. Not show. But
okay, you mean show by show off.
Yes.
Because I have written down here to show love. It has to be shown. Or how does anybody know? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. But from the heart.
Right.
You know, it's a will. It's a purpose. It's loving God. You love his children.
Right. So we do it because we love God. That's why we do it. Because... otherwise, if we didn't love God, we could go on about our merry way and not ever even show up at church and not even have a relationship with any church members or other Christians or whatever. We could just pick and choose who we hang out with. And, you know, most of the time people in the world tend to hang out with people in the world. So, in John 13:34, Jesus tells the disciples there, the apostles, I think it is there, a new commandment I give to you, that you love one another as I have loved you, that you also love one another. By this, all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. So, it's a direct command here. He's talking to the apostles right before he's betrayed, and he's talking about who's going to betray him and that kind of thing. But for them, if they're loving one another, all will know. Who's he talking about? All will know. Who's all? By them loving one another, all will know that you're my disciples. Right. Anybody, whether they're other Christians or whether they're people in the world, you know, they see what we're doing. I think some people think that, you know, that nobody notices what they're doing all the time. And that is so not the case, is it? People do notice what's happening. People are going about their own business. I don't mean they're just spying on you and, you know, keeping an eagle eye on you. But, you know, people see things. People see what's going on. So when Jesus is telling the apostles here to love one another so that others will know. I have that point also down here on, let me find it. Oh, in 1 Thessalonians 4, 9 through 12. Let's just look at that right quick since we're already discussing that. Or since I brought that up. 1 Thessalonians 4, 9 through 12. Sally, can you read that, please?
But as touching brotherly love, you need not that I write unto you, for ye yourselves are taught of God to love one another. And indeed you do it toward all the brethren that are in all Macedonia. But we beseech you, brethren, that ye increase more and more, and that ye study to be quiet and do your own business and to work with your own hands as we commanded you, that you may walk honestly toward them that are without, and that we may have lack of nothing.
Okay, there's a lot in these four verses, but right now I'm picking out the fact that Verse 12, you may walk properly toward those who are outside. So other people can see your example. I had somebody ask me recently why I did something that I did. And I told her it was because I was a Christian. I mean, a non-Christian asked me that. She just couldn't understand how I was able to do... I don't even remember now what it was specifically, but she just said, you know, I don't understand how you can do that. And I said, because I'm a Christian. I want to be pleasing to God. That's exactly what I said to her. And I mean, it didn't start a conversation. She just... she listened, but she didn't take it any further than that. But, you know, people do see. They do see. And it's important that we set an example, because sometimes we don't ever have the opportunity to speak to another person about Jesus, say, you know, some stranger on the street. But if they see what you're doing, it might spark something in their heart to seek out. I wonder why that person is able to act that way or is willing to act that way. Sometimes it's, you know, willing to give up something. So,
it's like Timothy and Paul Collins. You know, there, he took Timothy and he had a good reputation with mm-hmm. brethren. And so Paul didn't know him that well, probably.
Right.
So
he went on what other people said.
Yes. And what he saw while he was there.
Right.
But so, it, and then look what he turned out to be for the cause of Christ.
Exactly. Okay. All right. So look, the Romans 12, we're all familiar with that passage that talks about tender affection as between brothers. Now, I mean, we're all aware that physical brothers don't always have tender affection for one another. But I think this is what God intended. And I think that's what he's referring to here when he tells us to love one another like that. So maybe if the affection... Say the actual natural affection, because as I mentioned a while ago, there's some people it's hard to like. But as Pat said, we can pray for that person. It's hard not to like a person that you're praying for, that you're asking God to help. And it's hard not to feel a bond with that person, because we do have a bond. And if it's not there, then we need to pray that it gets there. And so in 9 and 10 in this chapter, where it's talking about be kindly affectionate to one another with brotherly love. What do other versions say? Pat, what's yours saying?
Be devoted to one another in brotherly love. Give preference to one another in honor.
Okay. So we can give attention or... what's your say? Mine says kindly affectionate. What was your first three words?
Be devoted
to one another. I think I like that better. Does anybody have anything different than those two?
Where are you reading?
Romans 12, 9.
Okay.
I mean 10. 10. I'm kind of disproving my own point here. Hang on. I think what I'm trying to say is that we may not naturally feel affection for everyone. Does that make sense to everybody?
Well, there's a difference in the kind of love that husbands and wives have and the affection they have.
Right.
The natural affection you feel for your own children. I have affection for other people's children, but my children are special
mm-hmm.
to me.
Okay.
And so, but when it comes to brethren, we may not have, some people we have a natural affection. You know, there's some people that... For some reason, you make
you're
a connection, and there is an affection there. But I think the brotherly love here, I don't know that I would make that the same kind of love as between brothers, because you made the point. You know, the brotherly love is there our special... We love them as a neighbor, but we have the brotherly love because... I could be wrong about this, but this is just the way I take this. The brotherly love here is they're our brethren. They have committed
okay.
their lives to Christ, and their affection for Christ, and their striving to serve. So I should have even if it's not, I wouldn't call it an affection, but there's a special love should be between Christians, because we're all striving for the same goal. We're trying to help each other. And that's why it's so encouraging for me, and I know for everybody else here, that comes in, they're on vacation, and they're going to be here a lot. They're here on Wednesday night, just like they were on Sunday morning and Sunday night. Because that brethren
it's
like
their
that,
priority.
You know, that gives you a special feeling for them, because they're so devoted.
And you don't even know
them. Yeah, don't even know them. But when we travel and you're so warmly welcome somewhere. That's kind of different when you go somewhere and everybody acts like, oh, sick. You get there. But you still love them and you appreciate that they're there, so you can't worship. But there, we should have a special connection with people who are present, even though maybe we don't share anything in common in the physical realm. To me, it's more important, whatever they do for a job, whether they're like Matt and the geophysicist, or like the new lady that was just baptized that cleans houses. We have a special bond with them, not because of what they do and we gain money. We love them and have a special bond with them because they're Christians.
Right, we share a faith. Okay.
Lauren?
Yes.
The King James Version says, be kindly affectionate one to another with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another. The ASV says, in love of the brethren, be tenderly affectionate one to another in honor, preferring one another.
Okay, so can we have a tender brotherly love for one another, even if we may not see eye to eye on everything? I can think that is the point. You know, or they're different from us, or whatever.
In verse 11, it's kind of telling you the opposite. Don't be lagging behind in diligence, fervent in the spirit, because you are serving the Lord.
Right.
When you're showing your brotherly love.
Okay. Okay. And then the other one I have is 1 Thessalonians 4:9-11, which we talked about a while ago about what's setting an example. That passage also says, increase more and more. I should have caught that when I was there, but let me just double check and read that and make sure I'm quoting it right.
I need to
talk about Excel more? Yes, mine says increase more and more. Yours says Excel? Is that new NASB?
No, I don't understand.
That's it. That's NASB. Okay, Excel still more. Well, that's where Chris is getting his podcast title. Okay. All right. Well, what does that mean? Mine says increase more and more. What is that? Love one another in verse 9, and indeed do so, you do so toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia. And he's praising them for that. He's pleased with that. But we urge you to increase more and more or excel still more. So how would you increase more and more in your love for one another?
Practicing
it. Just keep on practicing.
There shouldn't be any end to it.
Right. There's no stop. We don't get to retire, which we talk about in several different under several different subjects. It's something that you just don't stop doing. All right. Now let's look at the parent-child relationship as far as being emotional as well as caring. Pat referred to this a while ago as, you know, we love our children a certain way and with a certain kind of affection. We can love other children with a certain kind of affection, but that may not be the same as the way we love our own children or grandchildren or whatever. But, you know, the biblical examples of that, they're all over. Like in 1 Samuel, Hannah took her son after she gave him away. She gave him up for the Lord, gave him to the Lord. She took him a robe every year. She didn't just stop caring about him. She always loved him as her son. And then in 1 Kings, when King Solomon had the two mothers brought before him with one baby, one had rolled over and killed her baby in the night, and both were claiming the baby. But the real mother would rather see her baby given to someone else than having split in two. That is natural affection. That's an emotional love. And then lots of others. Jacob mourned Joseph when he thought he was killed, and David begged God to let his baby live, you know, the baby that was born out of wedlock. Even in the New Testament, the father of the prodigal son, did he love that boy? That boy was a mess. He's probably a man by now. He made a bunch of mistakes, but the father still loved him. He was his son. So, I mean, we can see clearly that, you know, what an emotional attachment would be to, you know, with a parent-child thing. And Pat also mentioned in a marriage relationship, that's totally different than say, our relationship with other people at church, other couples. You know, that's not a feeling we have for other adults. That's between a husband and a wife. So there is a difference between the way, the kind of affection that we have for family members or spouses or whatever, and between how we're supposed to feel for our brothers. Yeah.
Jesus loved his son. And yeah. On the cross, he told John, basically, now your responsibility to take care of him. There were other women there
mm-hmm.
who had helped him in his work. But he didn't tell somebody to take care of them. He just asked John to take care of her.
Mm-hmm. And as far as the brothers that maybe don't have a good relationship, that maybe don't have any affection, that's something that can probably be fixed with prayer, like we were talking about in this other situation where, you know, when you pray for someone that is giving you a hard time, you can change your attitude. It can change your attitude toward that person. And sometimes if we show that person that we love them, they soften up too.
Well, and some brothers and children, they have an affection for one another, but they don't live close together. They don't have the opportunity to be together when they get together. They don't want one another
right.
company. But it's just not feasible to
right.
have the kind of relationship that you do if you live next door to one another or all live on the same street, which is a wonderful thing if that happens, maybe, if you don't get along. But that doesn't mean they don't love each other just because they're not together all the time. And that's the same thing I think it is with our spiritual brethren. There are brethren that I see maybe once every 3 or 4 years, or talk to them on the phone maybe once or twice a year. But when we talk, it's like we never...
Right, you never stopped.
Never stopped. It was just you picked up where you were, and when you see them, you have that bond.
Okay. Can emotional feelings interfere with care and love? Yes. What's an example? What can our feelings about our children keep us from doing sometimes?
Discipline.
Absolutely. And we can get off on the wrong track as far as, you know, well, you know, I can't hurt them. What about when they're adults? And they need some discipline, but it's too late for you to discipline them.
It's never too late.
Okay, that's true. We can always talk to them.
I know when Lisa was going to a different church and she was all messed up, and we just happened to be in the car together at the same time, and she asked me something about church or where she was going, and I had an opportunity to really let her know how wrong she was and how bad she was doing. She thought she was doing the right thing because she was going to church. And I just had the opportunity, and I thought, if I don't take advantage of this right now, I'll never have the opportunity again. And look at her now.
Mm-hmm.
She has come so far.
You never know when something you say at the right time will fix it. But another way that, you know, when kids are so wayward, that they, you know, they're not interested in going to church. They're not even interested in God. But that's my child. That's my daughter. That's my son. What are we going to do? We have to think pretty hard about that, don't we? Okay, what other relationships might feelings interfere with the what the kind of love that God expects us to have for?
We can have hurt feelings and cause us to act badly. You know,
right.
They could have done something, or we could have been misunderstood.
We can hold things against people
yes.
when they didn't even know what they did.
Exactly.
I mean, maybe they did know what they did. But either way, what's the way to fix that? We need to talk to them, don't we? And maybe it's something they did, they didn't even realize they did. Maybe it's something that they knew they did but had no idea how it would affect you. Or maybe it's something they did not caring how it affected you. Any of those situations, I think the answer is to talk to that person and try to fix the problem, fix the situation. We're going to talk more about some ways that...
before you do that, Jesus taught, if you know you sinned against somebody, you go talk to them.
Right.
He also taught, if they sinned against you, you go talk to them. So it's on us, whether we sinned or they sinned.
Okay.
Jesus expects us to try to get it straightened out.
Okay.
And most people think, well, it's their fault. They did it, they can come talk to me. But that's not what Jesus taught.
Okay, we're going to talk a little more about this in question 6, which is some attitudes that may obstruct brotherly love, not just hurt feelings, but some other things. But we'll talk about that then. But for now, let's turn over to question 5. And this kind of goes along with this. Is the love of brethren automatic? We kind of talked this over pretty good. We don't necessarily love everybody the same, do we? As Pat mentioned a while ago, some people we're drawn to. Some people we have things in common other than our faith. Things we like to do together. Some people we don't even agree on some scriptural things, maybe some judgment things, and so that tends us to make us pull away or push away. Or some people, you know, like, I'm a grandmother. I don't have kids at home, so I don't hang out with Melissa very often. But when I do, we have a great time. We have, and we have a lot of fun. I've gone to lunch with Kisa, but usually her kids aren't there. If you make the effort to cross those gaps, to bridge those gaps, I think it's surprising the relationships you can forge sometimes. I think a lot of times we think we have to stay in our age group or our pocket. I think my whole life, most of my friends have been older or younger, almost exclusively. I can't even explain that. But we need to be careful not to let differences like age or, as Pat mentioned a while ago, economic status or, you know, whatever, schedules.
Interests,
different interests, yeah. Like Elizabeth and I quilt, but we don't ever get together and quilt together. You know, we talk about it some, but we're friends anyway. We're close anyway, so. But she and Sandra don't have that in common. And look how close they are. It can be anything. It can be anything. So don't let differences like that interfere with, you know, having a really close relationship with someone. Okay. Actually, I didn't answer the question, Jeff.
Is it automatic?
Yeah.
I said no, because if it was, Jesus wouldn't talk.
That's exactly what I wrote down, and I didn't even get to it. I'm sorry.
It's something over and over and over throughout all the scriptures.
Commanded repeatedly.
It's a problem.
Yes.
Because of jealousy and so many other things that enter in, even among the apostles. There was, right there at the end, they were fighting over who was going to be preeminent. And
who got to be on the right hand.
Yeah. And so it's a problem, and we all have to fight it. But, you know, if we would treat our brethren like we do treat our physical family when there's a problem, you know, so many times when it's a brother, they cut them, and some people do it in their physical families, too, cut them off and never speak to them again. But that's not common. Usually, especially as long as parents are...
Are you talking about Christians?
No, just in a physical family.
Oh, okay.
Sometimes brothers...
Because they get mad.
They get mad at one another, okay. Brother and sister, and somebody the other day, I don't remember who I was talking to, they weren't a Christian. They hadn't spoken to somebody in how many years? They were mad. It was a family member, and I thought, sad. But we do Christians that way sometimes. Okay? They hurt our feelings, or we're just sick and tired of what they're doing.
It may have been Blanche's son. It may have been Blanche's son.
It may have been. I don't remember where it was, but, you know, it was just... That may have been what it was. I can't remember. But that's sad. As Christians, we should not let that happen. We may not have everything in common, and we may not enjoy doing what they do, but they may not enjoy doing what we do. But why not try it and see? You know, you may learn to like it.
You never know. When
I started with the quilt show, it wasn't my favorite place.
What was your favorite thing?
The quilt show, the first time or two we went. But, you know, after going, it wasn't the quilt show I enjoyed. It was being together.
Mm-hmm.
And I did enjoy the quilt show. I bought stuff there, but that was, you know, it really...
But do you go look at the quilt?
Kept me going.
But do you go look at the quilt?
Occasionally.
Yeah. See, we're all there together, but we want to do different things. So
and everybody goes their own way. We meet up at lunch.
Right. And that's what makes it fun.
That's about an hour and a half. Because we get there at 10 and meet at 11:30, and then we all separate. And about 1:30 or 2, we're back together deciding who's leaving and who's staying.
It's a fun thing to do. We should probably do more stuff like that.
Yeah, and so, but that causes us to grow together because you get to know somebody better when you're sitting around the table at the George R. Brown and hear them talk and see what they find. You get to see a different mm-hmm. side of them than we see it.
Mm-hmm.
And you get to see that too when you're sitting across your own eating table.
When you have them over?
You know, it's nothing but a cup of coffee, you know, or a piece of toast or whatever, you know.
There's a reason God wants us to practice hospitality. There's a lot of reasons, actually. It's good for both sides. Did you want to say something, Margaret? Oh, okay. All right. I just added on my list, on number six on my list of attitudes, which we'll talk to when we get to number six, jealousy, because Pat mentioned jealousy, because I think a lot of people are jealous of other Christians in the congregation's relationship. And so I think that's something that can be a problem for people. So we'll talk about that more when we get there. Okay, now, okay, we did question five, so now let's do question, let's see what question are we on? We did one and two. Okay, three. Why are we to love one another? This this is almost kind of a repeat of the question in the lesson of why should we serve one another, but hopefully a little more specific. It's, you know, in concerning love. You know, the bottom line is it's commanded. At multiple places. We talked about that in John, what verse was that? John 13, 34, and Romans 12, 1 Thessalonians 4, 1 Peter 1. So, I have 13, 34 right here again. And then in chapter 15, verse 12 and 17, it reiterates another point we've already made about all will know we are disciples, his disciples, if we love one another and treat each other like we love one another. You know, is it going to do us any good to say, sacrifice our time to take someone to the doctor, but we're bitter and resentful about it? No, we got to make sure our attitude is the way God wants us to be. That's not loving one another. That's doing something under duress. That's something, that's doing something because I have to. I guess I'll go do it, you know.
Well, and it's like the guy who's praying, obviously,
yes.
Wonderful prayer. But
how wonderful
he,
I am.
Yeah. He went away condemned. The man who just didn't forgive me, I'm a sinner, went away righteous, you know, forgiven. And so many times I'm afraid if we're not careful, we do things. Because if we don't, so-and-so's going to see and know that I didn't do that. They've done that. And I need to do that too. And, you know, but we're not doing it because we're doing it out of a free heart. We're doing it because either we know somebody's going to be watching and we want the praise for that, or we don't want the grief that will come if we don't.
Sure.
Also here in chapter 15, it says, as I loved you. He not only commanded, he showed. And so, you know, we have to, it comes back to the heart.
Right. It's an attitude issue.
It's an attitude.
The whole thing. Yeah.
Christ gave everything, you know. And I'm fussing because I got to give up a time or something comes up, you know, and I had something planned, you know, minuscule thing. And, you know, fuss about it or think, well,
I guess I'll do that. Y'all need to know that I'm talking to myself here, too. I'm guilty of this stuff, too.
Yeah. We don't want our plans to be interrupted. That's something that takes an adjustment sometimes. But if you're going to serve, you don't just get to serve when it's convenient. You have to serve. I'm sure when we're convenient, Christ will leave heaven. I remind myself of that when I've got some plan and something comes up and I think, nope, better not go there because God's going to judge me as I judge others. So,
you know. It's important.
The unforgiving servants, you know, where the king forgives them all this.
Mm-hmm. Then he goes out and demands payment. That is just beyond my comprehension, really. That he doesn't see what he's doing. And it makes me wonder if I'm doing that and I don't realize I'm doing it. That's a scary thought.
When we read something and we think, or I'll see somebody doing something and I'll think, how many things do I do that people wonder, why in the world is she doing this? What can't she see? And so you're right, it's scary.
It is scary. All right, let's look at 1 Thessalonians 3, 12 and 13. I don't remember who's read. Melissa, will you read that?
And may the Lord cause you to increase and abound in love for one another and for all people, just as we also do for you, so that he may establish your hearts without blame and holiness before our Lord and Father at the coming of our Lord Jesus with all his.
Okay, so we talked about this in another passage about increasing and abounding in love to one another. And as Sally said, it doesn't stop. It keeps, it's an ongoing thing. It does not end, you know, when you hit your quota. It's something we have to concentrate on at all times and keep doing it. I don't know if this, the Pat, does yours say excel or increase?
Increased and abound.
Okay. Well, who is he talking to here?
Christians
in Thessalonica. But he's saying, just as we do to you. So that he's already shown his love for them, and he's wanting them to follow his example. And then in verse 13, another thing I made note of is that our hearts may be blameless. So your heart can be blameless and holy before God. Luke 1:6 says to be righteous, that blameless means righteous or walking in commandments and the ordinances of the Lord. So if we're not, we can keep every, commandment that's not an attitude, like attend, be sure you're attending, be sure you take the Lord's Supper, be sure you contribute. But if our attitude toward our brethren is not what it ought to be, those things are going to, they're empty. They don't work, they don't add up to anything. So we've got to have blameless hearts in all that we do. Linda was talking about a while ago, having a sincere heart and a pure heart, as my Bible said. You know, just as I said a minute ago, it's an attitude thing. We have to do it to be pleasing to God. And to if we don't have the right attitude, we're not going to do it. And it's not going to abound. It's not going to increase.
Also, the word there to establish means to increase, to make more perfect your holiness, to make us more steadfast in that. It builds our character in service in that. God didn't give us something that wasn't good for us, and He wants us to be more like Him. So to establish to be unblameable, we'll never get to the point of being blameless. But if we do what He says and we continue to do it and we abound in it more, then He says we will grow in that and be more like that.
Right.
And so, what a great thing. It's for our good and it's for our growth.
Mm-hmm.
And
flip over real quick to 2 Thessalonians 1, verse 3 and 4. It talks about your faith growing exceedingly, and the love of every one of you all abounds toward each other. They're coupled together here. Mm-hmm. It's like you said, it'll establish our character, it'll help our faith grow. And not to mention that we're being an example to other Christians. Verse 4, he says, we are boasting of you among the churches of God. All the other churches are hearing about the Thessalonians and the good hearts they have and the growing faith they have.
And that's in the midst of their persecutions.
Exactly. So, if sometimes, I don't even know how else to say it. I mean, the fact that other people are hearing of their work, you didn't just pick up the phone back then. It was a matter of time and, letters to get there, or people, one. It was just a slow process either way. So, we never know when somebody's going to hear something about us, either individually or our congregation, and how we're functioning here. Okay, I guess we should stop. So we'll start with 1 Peter 1 next time. Next week's the 27th. Okay, thanks. And hopefully we can finish that lesson next week and move into the next one.
You were talking earlier about picking and choosing what you wanted to do in Matthew 23. In verse 23, Jesus is quoting scribes, Pharisees, hypocrites, who tithe, the guilt, coming, and have been neglected the greater provisions of the law, justice and mercy and faithfulness. But these are the things you should have done without neglecting the others. So they were doing something, and that's
right.
Great that they're tithing.
We can't just do part of it.
No, but they weren't so good with their justice and mercy and faithfulness. So.
Awesome, that's a good point. Anybody else have anything to say before we stop? Okay, anybody?